Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. I'm Brian McCallan. This show airs every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Now, on to the show. Today's guest is Dan Roberts. Dan is the founder and director of MD Support. That's short for Macular Degeneration Support. Dan joins us to talk about how MD Support helps people affected by macular degeneration and other low vision challenges. He'll also talk about how MD Support's new Low Vis Guide helps the blind navigate indoor spaces. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thank you, Brian. I'm enjoying being here, and I'm glad you got in touch with me.
Glad I got in touch with you, too. Let's first learn about MD Support's history. How did you decide to retire from being an educator and start MD Support?
Well, it was not something I expected. I was a high school music teacher for 23 years. And in my late 40s, I was diagnosed with a condition called central serous retinopathy, which is like macular degeneration. It's a different pathology, but it takes away central vision over a period of time. And that's what I had. I was diagnosed by a doctor who said there wasn't anything they could do for me, and he just sent me home. That was not a good thing to do, because I went into a depression for about a year. I retired from my teaching job. I retired from my job at the church as a church music minister, thinking that I was going to go blind. And it was simply because I was ignorant. And, you know, I don't blame the doctor for my ignorance, but I do blame him for not telling me that there were resources where I could learn about my condition and not make such drastic, draw such drastic conclusions about my future. On the other hand, it was a blessing because I reached a lot of students as a music teacher and as a director, a theater director, and that kind of thing through my life. But now I'm reaching many, many thousands more through the work that I'm doing because of that. My wife, Christina, pulled me out of my depression by saying, "Why don't you try this thing called the internet? Get a computer and see what you can find." And so I did, and that was the beginning of it right there. I found a group on the internet on an email listserv called MD List, and made friends. They found out that that I like to look things up, so they kind of made me their leader. They started asking me the questions. Being a teacher, I love to teach, so I would look up the answers. And I started putting them on a website that I learned how to do, and it was very crude at the time. And it was a way of storing all that information for new people that came into that listserv. And that now is about 1,000 pages or more of information, because I can't throw anything away, as my wife will be happy to tell you. That's where the website came from, and we eventually incorporated it in 1998 as a nonprofit organization so that we could get grants and start doing some outreach.
How does MD Support provide information for people who have macular degeneration?
We provide it in the beginning. We started out on the internet. We started out putting it out there. And then I realized that there's a lot of people. And that was about 10 years that I was mainly concentrating on internet communication. And I started realizing the number of people out there who did not have a computer, just like I didn't in the beginning. And they were still just as unknowledgeable as I was. Therefore, they were just as afraid as I was. And the worst part of this disease is the fear of the unknown. And so I decided we've got to get this out to those other people. And that means somehow finding a way to reach them wherever they hang out. And so I thought, where do old people hang out? Well, I was becoming one of them. So I thought, okay, I'm an old person. Where would I hang out? And I thought, okay, I would hang out at senior citizens community centers, might live in a retirement home. I would go to the library a lot because I don't have a computer myself. And so I started contacting people in those environments and finding people that had laptops at the time or computers of any kind, and said, I will provide you with programs for these people if you'll become their leader. And so that started the what we call the International Low Vision Support Group, which now has 150 chapters, affiliates around the world. We've got about 16 countries that are part of that now, about 36 states here in the United States, I think 37 now that we just got Arkansas added to it. And so we started reaching people through other people and found out that was a pretty good way to do it. We tried the route of going through the clinics and the doctors to get information to them, but we hadn't built a reputation, and a doctor is not going to just start handing out things from whoever walks in and says, here, give this out. I understood that, so I went directly to the people, and I used nurses in retirement homes, volunteers in senior citizen centers. I used librarians as my affiliates, and I said, would you mind just once a month meeting with your groups and showing them these videos and playing these recordings that I'm making with volunteer researchers and doctors who were willing to give us their time to do presentations and PowerPoints. And that grew into now the International Low Vision Support Group. And we have over 100 presentations online right now that are available to the general public. And we have an even larger library for the affiliates, because there are some presentations that are bound by copyright and that kind of thing that I have used.
Let's talk about some of those presentations, because you've got an audio and video library on your site showing the resourceful eye health and independent living information. Three pieces of information are the 25 ways to see, body weight and eye disease, and facing technophobia. What information, and just briefly, do you offer in these presentations?
Well, I wrote one of those. 25 Ways to See was my research on all of the different sensory ways that a person can see without using their eyes. And so from my own personal experience and talking to the people that know and interviewing patients, I came up with 25 ways that you can actually see the world and live independently without even having to use your eyes. The other two articles were written by guest authors. Usually they're somebody I met at a convention who did a presentation, and I asked them, can I take that recording of that presentation, or will you come and make a recording with me, like you and I are doing right now, and let me turn that into a presentation for our monthly session. And so those other two subjects that you mentioned came from that.
There's also some photo essays on the site from individuals with their own stories about their vision loss. Three of them are Finding My Stride, Macular Degeneration, The Inside Story, and another one called The Task. It's spelled out as TASK, all in uppercase with little periods. The right. Task of Living with Central Vision Loss. Tell us briefly about these inspirational stories.
The first one was Finding My Stride. This was a young lady I met when she was 12 years old. She wrote to me on her own. By that time, I had a large website and was pretty easy to find. And she said, my parents don't believe me. I tell them I can't see, and they don't believe me. And it ended up that I talked to her parents. I learned about her situation. And eventually, they did take her to a doctor, and she was diagnosed with Stargardt disease. She doesn't have no central vision. She has none. And it turns out that she now shows horses. That was her love when she was a child. And she now is a champion horse, I guess we could call them, what do they call?
Horse rider?
Okay, we'll call it that. Equestrian.
Equestrian, that's right.
Yeah, that's the real name for it. And that's what she does now. She's 20 years old now, and she is doing that. She's going around the country, and in addition to showing horses and performing horse shows, she is also doing speaking engagements about how you can succeed in spite of low vision. So that turned out very well. And her whole story is on my website. I asked her if she would just tell that whole story, and we spent several months on that, and I did the editing, and she submitted photographs of her growing up and her horses and that kind of thing, and it turned into a really nice presentation that's on the website. These are inspirational stories that I like to put on there for people, because I know when I was diagnosed, I needed people. I needed to hear that I wasn't alone in this and that they were going through the same thing I was. And I wanted to hear about people that succeeded and see how they did it so I could model. So that was that story. The task of living, let's say, the first one, Macular Degeneration, The Inside Story, actually came from my book I had published in 2006. And I wrote I put together a video of that book to help people to learn, not necessarily that book, but the website. I kind of turned the website into a video that explained what macular degeneration was and what the treatments are and that kind of thing. And we gave that away. Over 10,000 copies were given away. And that was fundraising like crazy to make those and reproduce those and get those out to people. And that's before webcasts and podcasts were available. The task of living with vision loss, TASC, stands for tenacity, adaptability, support, and knowledge. Those were the four things that I decided were important to a successful living with vision loss. And so I just took each one of those, and that became a presentation that I have presented many places around the country at conventions and that kind of thing. And so it's just kind of a tutorial about how you can deal with vision loss through all of the, and using those tools. Tenacity is a big one. You have to be ready to do it, and you got to have the strength and the power within yourself to tackle this, because it's not easy. Adaptability is very important. We have to be willing to change and then adapt to new ways of doing things using our other senses. And I gave them resources and that kind of thing where they could find those ways, those adaptive technologies and that kind of thing at the time. Support, of course, is very important. That's what ACB does with all of its support groups around the country. And that's what I do with my support groups. So it's very important that people have support that is ready and available when they need it. Not somebody that's going to tell them, you just have to live with it, good luck, I'll see you later, which a lot of people get. And knowledge, of course, that's getting rid of the fear of the unknown, what I call the monster behind the door. When we get to know that that monster really isn't a monster, it's just a skinny little monkey, then we can handle it. And so that's what this is all about.
We'll get back to more about MD support toward the end of the show. But we got to talk about the Low Vis Guide Indoor Navigation mobile app. It just premiered at the ACB convention in Dallas. So MD Support created this special Low Vis Guide. And you got to tell our listeners now about this great tool.
Okay, it is my pet project now. A year ago, one of my partners from MD Foundation, the director of it, Liz Tronicht, and we've been partners for about 10 years, and I mean business partners, for about 10 years. And she said to me, I just came back from the ACB convention in Las Vegas, and I was very upset when I saw so many people having such a hard time navigating that huge hotel, which I think was the Riviera. And they were just totally lost in this new environment. She said, isn't there something that you can do? And I said, me? And she said, yes, you. I'll pay for it if you'll do it. So I started thinking, well, what can we do? And I came across this new technology called indoor wayfinding, which is brand new. A lot of people have never heard of it before. But what it is, very simply, is it's GPS. But it works under roofs where satellites can't see you. It works by beacons that are battery-powered inside the building. And I said, that'll work. And so I went out to San Francisco, and I looked at their airport where this company had set up a trial demonstration model of how this works. I was impressed. What it is, you simply have a smartphone in your hand, and in this case it's an iPhone or an iPad, and you, as you're walking around the facility, you're listening to it describe your surroundings. As far detailed as where the outlets are, where you can plug in to charge up your phone, where are the restrooms, where's the trash can, everything is described to you as if you were a visual person walking around, up to a distance of as far as 300 feet away, even through walls. You can tell what's around the other side of that wall because these things know that. They're beacon radio technology. And then if you want to go to a particular point of interest, you simply say into the phone the name of the point of interest. If you want to say men's restroom, it will immediately start guiding you with a tone that rises and falls. It'll guide you right to the door of the men's restroom while it's telling you what's around you. It's fantastic to watch. I simply took what they did at the airport, contacted the company that had designed that for them, and asked, will you design one for low vision conferences where we can use this same technology? And so they said, give us the design, we'll put it together. They charged me a lot of money, which I got from Liz. And within 9 months, we have an app now online that works at the conventions where we set this up. It's portable. That's what makes it different than other companies now setting up indoor wayfinding in hotels and shopping malls and museums and hospitals. They're going to pop up everywhere. Ours is the only one. It's unique because it's specifically for low vision conferences, and it's portable. It can be moved from convention to convention. And so we did the ADA convention first in May, tested it on about 20 people. They were very excited about it. We worked out some bugs and took it to ACB in Dallas and worked out some more bugs. And now we're taking it in a couple of weeks to the Blinded Veterans Association convention in Kentucky. And I think most of the bugs are worked out. If not, I've got three more conventions lined up through October, and we're going to have this thing working.
Now, keep it brief, but what are some of the unique features of the app?
One is that you can actually filter out what you don't want to hear. It can be very chatty. It can just sit there and talk to you and tell you all of these things around you for up to 300 feet. If you really don't care, you can filter it down to just specifically what you're looking for, and it will guide you to that. That's a feature. I mentioned the tone that it uses. GPS doesn't provide a tone in a car, so a lot of people don't understand this technology. But as they're walking, if they don't hear this pitch sounding, they're on track. They're on the route that they asked for. If the pitch starts to rise in pitch and volume, they need to adjust their distance, either left or right, their direction. And they keep that tone quiet and as low as it can sound. And if they can do that, they have reached their destination eventually. It also vibrates for people who are visually, not just visually impaired, but also hearing impaired.
These are very easy features to use. But what are some of the problems with the app? I've heard there have been some problems. And how are they being fixed? Maybe, perhaps, how can our users, the users of the app, even solve the problems?
I have, since the convention in Dallas, I've put together a frequently asked questions, which we call a FAQ, that answers all of those questions. What do I do, for example, when it takes me up to a wall and there's no door? What do I do? Or do I just stand there with my nose on the wall? That was one problem we had at the ACB convention. And what you do, for example, is you move your iPhone, and which, by the way, you're holding level and pointed forward all the time, like a flashlight, because it is a compass. It has to be held like a compass. I tell them, turn it to the left, turn it to the right, and the way that you don't hear that tone or it's not vibrating is the way you want to go. And so that's what was happening in Dallas. People were coming up to a wall, and that's because this thing can see through walls. It knows there's a restroom there, and it's taking you to the restroom, but it's not taking you to the door. If you do what I just said, it'll eventually get you to the door. Since then, I have decided to zone it differently so that it doesn't actually see the room itself. It'll only see the door. And I'm going to try that in Louisville and see if that will work better than this. I think the biggest problem we had with this was things that people, if they'd known more about the app, they could have fixed themselves. Like, it talks too fast. Well, okay, you go to VoiceOver and you slow it down. But then they say, well, what's VoiceOver? Well, there again, if they don't know how to use VoiceOver, they're immediately at a handicap. It's like handing a person a cane and not showing them how to use it. They're not going to use it right. They're going to find it difficult, and they're going to get frustrated. And that's the same way with this technology. It's such new technology that they have to at least know how to use a smartphone and how to use VoiceOver to be able to get the best use out of this. Those people that could do those two things picked it up immediately and started using it. And so we need training sessions at each of these conventions in the beginning. And eventually, people who know how will eventually start teaching other people, and the word will get around.
According to the ACB convention attendees, this is from their points of view. Did you get a lot of positive reviews at the convention about the new app?
I certainly did. I think we had 38 people who were actually using it out of the large number that were there. Those were people who found, first of all, had iPhones. That limits it right there. And then those who had iPhones that they knew how to use and knew how to use VoiceOver. So that brought it down to about 38 of those people. I didn't hear one complaint from any of them that I couldn't take care of. One problem that they had that I couldn't teach them how to get around it. With 38 people, that was difficult. I was very busy the entire time because I had to work with each one individually. That's why these training sessions are going to be important. And it's also going to be important that these people know ahead of time that they're going to use this app, and they need to go to my website, which is at mdsupport.org, read the instructions, read how to use it, do some homework, and then also read the frequently asked questions, and then they're going to be prepared to go and actually pick this thing up.
How do our listeners download the app and try it out? Is there even a cost?
No, there's no cost at all, and I hope there never will be. Right now I'm working on grants, and we're able to give this to the organizations. We pay all expenses, including our travel, our food, our lodging, and the cost of the beacons and everything else that goes into it. It costs about $5,000 to do a convention, a normal length convention. ACB was about $10,000 because it's twice as long, twice as big. But that's all covered by grants this year. We're hoping to also get the same grants for next year for the same organizations. We definitely want to do ACB again because that's the reason we started it in the first place.
How do our listeners download the app?
They go to mdsupport.org, and on that homepage, they'll see a link to Low-Vis Guide. That'll take them right to the page where it explains everything, and it also has a large link on there to download it from the App Store, so they don't have to go search for it in the App Store. And it'll also have all of the articles that have ever been written about it. It'll have the step-by-step instructions on how to use it and the frequently asked questions. That's where they need to go first. And then they can download. Right now, you could go there and download it. And what you're going to get is the map for the Louisville convention that's coming up because I've uploaded it to the app now. And that's the only place it's going to work. But if you want to download it and just look at it, you can go to that site, download it, and take a look at what it looks like. What you'll see is a screen with a map on it, and you're not going to be able to see any, the other screen, which is just the list. Well, I think you can actually get to that screen, which is just a list of the points of interest. And that's where people go who don't have vision, so they don't want to see the map. They just go to the list, and they use VoiceOver to read it to them, and they select the point of interest that they would like to have, or they do a search.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I just hope people now trust us. In the beginning, we had trouble getting the word out. Now I think we've built a trust so that people know that when they come to us and any of our partners, and I'm including Macular Degeneration Foundation, Macular Degeneration Partnership, Bright Focus, these are, and Prevent Blindness, and I am also editor-in-chief at Prevent Blindness. We're all in this together, holding hands for the people out there who need the help. We don't have personal agendas. We're not in competition. We actually work together on this. So if you hear those names, trust us, you're going to get the right information, and if I can't give it to you, I will send you to one of my partner organizations, and you will eventually get the answers that you need. And I would also, I neglected to mention one of my most important partners, and that's the ACB.
So how does ACB partner with MD Support?
Not financially, but philosophically. I consider us to be partners. We do things together. We share information. I have shared articles on your website. I still like to think of ACB as a partner because we are both heading the same direction. I don't know if we've ever been officially named that, but if you want to include that in the list, it wouldn't be an official announcement of any kind, no more than we have official proclamations that we're partners with these other organizations that I mentioned. But anybody that I work with, I like to consider to be my partner, because we're all in this together and we're working for the benefit of the community.
And this is why, Dan, the information is going to encourage our listeners to check out MD Support and the Low Vis Guide. They're not going to only be better informed about macular degeneration, but the audience is also going to look forward to the independence and the safety that's provided to navigate their indoor surroundings. Thanks for joining us today, Dan.
You're very welcome, Brian. Thank you.
Before we go, listeners, I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode, or past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind or Speak Out for the Blind. You may also visit my website at home.comcast.net/TildaMcCallen3. That's MCCALLEN, the number 3. And the show archive is at acbradio.org/speaking-out-for-the-blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.
Join me, Brian McCallum, on Speaking Out for the Blind. I interview famous and inspirational blind individuals and other specialists about a wide variety of topics, providing you with the steps to achieve your dreams. Speaking Out for the Blind airs Wednesdays at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Pacific, and repeats every 2 hours overnight and throughout the next day, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream.